Hello, and welcome to another podcast of Vermont's Last Theater in Madison, Wisconsin. We're here today with our friend Rick Meyer, who writes poetry under the name Richard Meyer, but we're going to be addressing him as Rick. But look for his books under the name Richard Meyer. And Rick's going to start today. Well, actually, a good portion of today will be reading from one of his latest pieces, Tiptoe Sot, and I will let him introduce that.
Okay, Tiptoe Sot is it's a handmade collection that's sort of me bringing together a group of works as I'm moving it towards being a book and having it be a handmade book in the interim that is something I can give away to friends and read from. And so I'm going to start at the beginning and read three longish sections from this book, which doesn't have titles or other interruptions during it. So I'm going to make a couple of breaks to make my way from beginning to end. So the first section begins at the very beginning of the book. So I'll start there. Tiptoe Sot. Found two pebbles in the small bays that form between the ice floes. Stood ice sheets in the snow to spell the book. And then by the river mouth used pebbles from the bay to write of pebbles in the snow. While I knelt in the snow with handfuls of pebbles and set them one by one to make the stems of the letters, or dribbled the smaller pebbles into stems two or three pebbles wide, I heard a sheet of ice from the jam break free, and then saw it float out the river mouth into the lake. Kaz said she and her sister acted out stories from books and movies as children, and experimented with how small a change was sufficient to change the story. A mountain undulates, and I experience peace even as ontologically ripped. The snow disappears in the sun underwater, the mountain then moves. I hear the strange moaning sound I heard in the night, and then I hear it subside. The bird tracks very faint, a small bird, a scrawl bird, and the seagull tracks that began made a right turn and ended. Monday, the deer tracks separating in lines descended the hill. Squirrel eating a strip of mulberry bark twists it as if riding or tying a knot. Sand in the driveway to melt the ice, potting soil on the neighbor's sidewalk, black with white beads. The river was running fast in small waves with snow melt and flicked back by the roaring south wind. Between the houses, the lake is smaller than the roof. Allison sang Come Away Death at rehearsal, and the room, the silence of the room around a singing voice, a still singer, gave me a chill in response to the space suddenly tangible, proprioceptive part of the body. Afterwards, in her office, she read me a very funny letter from Lamb to Wordsworth, how Lamb didn't care if he ever saw a mountain, and then a letter from Lamb to a friend, more sweaty letters from Wordsworth. The poems are good, he says, but doesn't want to be forced to eat. Tears and eyes talking about school, Mont Blanc, Viette, class. But I don't know what kind of tears they were, the happiness and sadness of a small thing inside a large thing, and the small thing larger still. The bottles in the mini-fridge rattle as the compressor ins and outs. I was radiant walking without a limp, noticing the flecks of yellow warning paint, ground by feet off the stairs and mixed with a scattering of lavender salt meant for the ice that was no longer there on the landing. The bells at Covent Garden is a phrase. Then the room rotates slowly around the eyes. An itch in the palm is a narrow pin going in and out while the sunlight through the hackberry and the lid coruscates inside the eye. Making present something not present can be perverse, perversity a type of lie, and so it is in kind with overacting while acting is the thing itself, including pretending itself. Holderlin says tragedy is fire and the co-mingling, size and no size, though he says God and human or human and nature, and a rage at the oneness that leads to separation. It's all one, I am thinking. Whistling holds water, then loosens coordination, promising witness that also redirects. Mountain streams hear each little insect that aspirates when visible links trickle down out of sight. Crotch falls through crotch, the bell opens and rings. Yesterday morning, when the man in number 7 stopped talking, I noticed a completely different relation in the sound of the train whistle than I had to his voice. Beep of a car being locked, cars passing, unidentified hum, crackle in right ear, seagull shriek. Without names, a locus of sensations. A fir tree behind a house grew out of the roof. The house a horse with a green-cloaked rider. Northern shovelers a pair in the sun at the widening open water out the mouth of the river. The male brown, white, green, blue, female mottled brown, the bills very wide and tilted down. Swam out past a branch, meeting its reflection at 3 points going into the water. A bird flies out of the hemlock tree, interlaced with the mulberry tree, and I see the sun in the river blown upstream and a canoe floating down through my armpit. Two woodpeckers land in the maple, circle the circumference of a branch, and ascend. This is a scratchy, somatic picture of the pain, plus tightness in my body right now, plus earlier, left glute meeting hamstring, band across lower back, right calf, left shoulder. When the body doesn't align itself to the page, and the page doesn't align itself to the body, when the alignment isn't complete, there is a conversation. A finched balance on the gutter, then the O of wood dangling from a wire, then the clothesline, then the basket of sticks, then the wind chime. And of those things, the movable ones, clothesline, O of wood, wind chime, basket of sticks, began this way and that in the energy transferred from the body of the finch. Celery, the knife thumping the board, the shadow of the hemlock moving on the still curtain. I am thinking of the December day, the snow piled on the head of a cardinal, a thistle, a tulip, a goldfinch. A man in a gray hood, a woman in a black hat, a leaf running up the sidewalk behind them. Yesterday by the river, Lisa said she needs to make a will, and when I woke James to dress rehearse Lear, he said he in a dream was measuring his script with a ruler and counting his cats. I think I was making a will, he said. After he ate, we sat on the daybed opposite ends, facing one another to do the first third of Lear. He put his feet on my stomach because they were cold. He told me he's noticed how susceptible to flattery Lear is throughout the play, the slightest kind word from the gentleman knight, and he changes his mood. I was thinking he should keep a long list of things he notices about Lear. Where is it dark enough to see the Milky Way? Now the road is white, too. Something loves hearing how snow leaves itself, comes back, settles, then departs. Oh, the books. Trees complement growth of many things, and also tip to toe, and then a book on Tao, how the great spirits in the region of lakes and rivers becomes lake and river spirits. The gods come down and then aren't gods, but the things that come down in the nerve endings deciding not to move. Sought, of all things, each has crystals, and will be seen according to that array. A man who can't sing well will sing freely, not knowing where he errs, and a man who sings well is bound to do so. Suppose the singing birds musicians, several of the S's backward in the field, the willow tree is longer than my toe, a singing lesson. The tiger behind the phonograph knows. Continuity, the first Wednesday noon sirens begin, one a second after the other, so rising and falling pitch is dissonant at its loudest moment, with itself divided. Dream wills taste legal, so shapes have only possible testimonies, indicating many aspects stay trapped, holding something in mouth, tasting its thrush leaving, the startled consummation. Lozenges of reflected dark glass grids on a north-facing brick wall before noon, and later the train shadow angled northwest to southeast, erasing one by one along that line the bent squares of sun coming through the elevated tracks. The movement of the pen counters the movement monitor bracelet or chip inserted in the hand, someone said. Thump of doors closing on spring-loaded hinges. Shaded land and sun striking a breakwater 100 yards out, 4 apples touching in a dish. Lear covered in ferns last night, and today his hand holding 2 small sheets of ice held stuck together, the point of the ice about to touch the water where the reflected hand had its natural hues, earth tones, oranges, pinks, browns, and the one in the air burned or rather dazzled in the eye, erasing itself by its whiteness in my eye who looked. The moment he leaned forward from the fool's question, thou canst tell why one's nose stands in the middle of one's face, another world appeared, something he'd found in the grass, an ant or a mouse, he'd been to it later, between the actors and the audience, the stage and the seats. It was in that place he saw he'd done wrong, saw his mistake as an overlooking of that space, the same one Cordelia felt when she refused to speak, into which she spoke her refusal, which found its voice in the howl, 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 directed at the stage, as Lear carrying Cordelia back through that space and feeling the life in it made that sound. But it is also there, facing the audience, leaning out and over her, the feather moving where the glass didn't fog. The mouse it is Lear better bends down to see and then to feed. The wood duck opens and closes his beak rapidly between the muskrats and the mallards. The female has white around her eyes that come to a point, and she is the first to climb out onto the ice. So that's the first section of this project.
Well, I'm wondering what you can tell us about where a piece like this begins, how it begins, or what you start from.
Sure.
By the way, to our listeners, if anyone who's familiar with Rick's poetry is hoping we will provide the key to the meaning of it all, that's not our job. And not Rick's either. But I do think it's okay to talk about the writing process.
Yeah, so I think...
Where this comes from.
It's for the last... Over the last many years, I've come to think of making poetry as more and more a practice that one commits to doing. And the poetry emerges from that practice, so one doesn't sit down to write a poem. I don't. At least so much as I sit down to do this practice, out of which something will emerge that I can then recognize and arrange or shape or reduce. So this book in particular, or this collection of things, comes from a daily, often twice daily, writing practice of that involved meditating for 20 or 30 minutes and then writing for 20 or 30 minutes, or walking for 30 minutes or an hour or a couple of hours and then writing in the aftermath of that. In immediate response to that, which generated, you know, and in doing any piece of that writing, a kind of rule for myself was to not think of that writing as being for anything, so without the idea of making it into a literary object at that moment. And then later, to gather all the writing from, this was from a 3-month period, which was, you know, 5 or 6 times as long as this, and then slowly reduce that and take out the dates that I included and so on and make it into a kind of single motion that moves from thing to thing. And I think of the things you heard, they're probably written on 12 or 15 different days. Mm. And yet there's a movement between it because the sites are similar and the activities have something in common. I think things move.
Oh, it definitely has a unity to it. I mean, it doesn't feel disjointed.
Yeah. And it turns out the things, you know, so classes I was teaching and discussions I was having with students, walks I was taking, situations I was in, books I was reading. James, who's mentioned, was doing King Lear at the Young Shakespeare Players, which I know Fermat's also knows about, one of the other great theater experiences in Madison. And so him being Lear and just running those lines endlessly with him is a very deep engagement with that writing in a different way than I'm used to engaging with it, as for me, acting in recent years has become a really different way to engage with text. And in a certain way, I see this practice as closer for me in some way to that experience of, in memorizing something and going over and over it, like something emerges without you consciously thinking about necessarily what your focus is, not on what it on what it means in a certain way, but kinds of patterns and things will emerge, like when we did Nicholas Nickleby together, that one wouldn't get by reading it over and over, but only by doing it. And so trying to move my writing practice into a space where it feels like something done so many times that it can kind of come out from the inside, I guess. Yeah, it's a long answer to a question about process. And well, maybe I'll read another section, and then there's another, there's another aspect of this that I'll talk about, and maybe there'll be some specific examples I can point to. There's sort of one other kind of hidden process that's less clear. So jumping ahead and picking up a little bit later, although you hear some things coming back.
Okay.
I'll start again. The flesh holds hands below leering, and coincident keeps drifting. My absolved caterpillar, your legion legs are made, presupposed perished. The poetics of continuity will deliver the mayfly, good insect, peaceful insect, opportune at grief's bitter upswelling. The butterfly began 1 week, folded before it compassed. Is that contumely? Howling grief, the welkin's shoulders move. Ground felt an eager toe. What do with agony move? Hardly move. Mention the agony, count peas in a pod, and italicize all answers. Grazing in winter like the boar taps the tree, frees its nuts. The shower hum in number 7 comes on. The black ink on the left index finger was written on again, before the page and alongside the page. A half moon, yellow-gray, on the north wall from the large porthole on the south. Streetlight and opening in the opening of the throat allowed descent into the body. A big thing, the sensation of entering one's body, already one's, and yet it swells on entering. And in the swelling, rises and also enters collapsing and weeping. I'm thinking, and as it happens, it happened, of those deep intakes of breath that follow long periods, hour, minute, day, of not breathing, as if breathing hadn't happened, and the fear that follows that I might never breathe again, or so rarely breathe, or that so much of my life has passed with hardly a breath, in long, barren intervals of empty chest. The sun warming the air makes the light on the blanket waver, a smoke shadow, and when I look closely at these rising shadows of air molecules, the blanket trembles without moving, and I tremble beneath it without moving. Wild animals move and move, move slowly. How will they go with nothing, even lighter with the event shrugged, hearing you juggle reasons until you shut the hole in the event? Crawling perhaps allows hope, drawing witness into the joints with the tiger. Teeth, finch, robin, fish. The body in a wetland the size of the body, a river flowing in at the mouth, a rabbinical commentary question design, red-winged blackbird trill, a rolled R collecting rocks in Cape Breton, by walking in the sea behind the house instead of the one in front of it, a house being an island, Lisa writes from Nova Scotia. 9 allows an integration, 10 returns 10, yoke plus man, then flies fiddling here, here. It's been a long time. In the index of first lines isn't there, because it's part of something larger, so I am flipping through from back to front to find it. There it is, the first line on the page is the first line on the page. The ice island pushed by the east wind found a tone arm in a willow branch hanging down a little in the water, lifted by the ice and thwomp, thwomp, thwomp. The tone arm willow played the ripples on the ice deepened by melting. A pair of wood ducks with a flock of mallards, is that mistaken? The rare duck has almost the same colors as the common, the arrangement of the feathers into a helm crown, and a white line tracing the edge of the opening for the face makes the distinction. There isn't any time coming out of the sun now. One has answered yes to what may never emerge, is yet here, noticed, not missed. If now patterns yell, entering all in all, here comes your ponies, Lee and La, and yearning yet said how the world goes. And that's where I stopped for that section. So I mentioned that there was this other practice that became part of this for me. So a lot of the daily writing that I was doing, when that practice first started, I gave myself the limit of sort of pure observation. And you hear a lot of that kind of close observation of things, describing birds or ice or whatever might be happening. But then that came to a sort of end in itself. It couldn't exist by itself somehow. And I learned a practice from a friend of mine, Lewis Friedman, which he called initialing, which involves listening to or reading a text and writing down the first letter of each word in that text, which was initially a mnemonic device used by the Greeks and used by early rabbis to say, remember entire pages of the scripture or something else and transport it in a small form, but also as a kind of way of reading. So he used it initially to then generate a new text by writing with those letters and writing a text that follows. But also then discovered that this was also a kind of early rabbinical way of reading passages in the Hebrew Bible, where the idea that I'm sure I'm getting this wrong in some way, but it's relatively right that every, not only every word, but every letter contained, was full of meaning. And so then, and this was allowed a kind of interpretation that's part of that tradition. And so a passage like the one I just ended with, if now patterns yell, entering all in all, here comes your ponies, Lee and La, and yearning yet sad how the world goes. That's from me having initialed something I was reading or something I heard, and then working with those initials as part of that daily writing. And for me, it felt like observing letters and the way letters work. So it was another kind of observation that was still outside me, but the language could still be generated by something that was already there, but obviously a very different kind of motion. And I think you hear at moments where the text gets a little bit different than an observed moment, and those are often those moments where that sort of initialing breaks in, or sometimes writing that has a related liberty, maybe, in the way it puts things together. Yeah.
But it, as I said, I don't hear it as disjointed. You mentioned in this later, the second section, I believe the phrase poetics of continuity, mm-hmm. is that right? Mm-hmm. Which, mm-hmm. and I think that's there. I mean, I think we're, well, so often a poem will give us, a poem will be sitting in one place looking at one thing and maybe giving us a very intense focus on that one thing. Can be even unbearably intense. And you're going, I mean, your focus is shifting constantly mm-hmm. from even just that point where you went from Lear feeding the mouse to a wood duck and then to a wire. I don't know if that was a wire over the street or which is its own kind of intensity, I think, just keeping up with it. Mm-hmm. And it's much more how the mind works, I think. So
yeah. And that phrase, I think, the poetics of continuity is another phrase that was sort of delivered by this initialing process.
Oh, okay.
So it feel, you know, that, and I feel that too. And those are often the ones I choose where I can't quite tell either where I stopped sort of choosing the first letters myself or when they were chosen for me. And I know a lot of times in this group, I was taking letters from Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And also I started to realize that a text will deliver a certain rhythm just in its first letters. So to me, to my ear, Shakespeare will sound like Shakespeare even by the first letters, that there's an aspect of that way of that kind of rhetorical movement or something that's sort of fascinating. And that phrase, yeah, that the poetics of continuity will deliver the mayfly, good insect, peaceful insect. Something about that reminds me of certain things in Lear or something, mm-hmm. the way him maybe in his madness. In
yes, zeroing the mouse and
just
tiny,
this kind of both logical phenomena. And, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I love kind of observing how I've absorbed those things and then how they come out again. And the hard part is to create, or the challenging part is to create a situation where that can happen freely, mm-hmm. right? Like,
and for you, it begins with the walking or the meditation or the...
Yeah. And then the things that will... And that, like, I think of that as making a space mm-hmm. where I'm not concentrated on thinking and I don't mm-hmm. remember the things, even though, of course, I think about things while I'm meditating. I don't have a perfectly empty mind, but I find I don't remember the things, even if things pass through my mind that I think I would like to write down. I don't try to remember them and I don't remember them and then they're just gone. And mm-hmm. something about that makes a particular kind of space. And again, a thing that to me felt connected to acting. I'm interested in talking about that with you because we've done that together and I know you've spent a lot of your life involved in that. You know, it's one thing to plan what you're going to do in the moment on the stage. Mm. And then find yourself there and something's happening and you don't even quite know what's happening.
Something
and
it wasn't different from what has ever happened in the rehearsal.
Right. Even though the planning and rehearsal was crucial to making that space for it.
Right.
At that moment, you can't be thinking and now I'm going to do this. You know, even if sometimes you can, but there's the moments that are the most magical, most intense.
You're not thinking that.
It's just something just happens. Yeah. And writing being, I mean, I think they're equally in their involvement with language, equally self-conscious by nature mm-hmm. in a certain sense. Like to be able to remember words that you memorized in a not self-conscious way seems like a really deep paradox. Mm-hmm. And yet I discovered that it's in fact only in memorizing them, or particularly in memorizing them, that happens.
Oh, those moments
that the self can fall away, right? Because they're just there, mm-hmm. like apart. I think somehow I didn't know that that's what it meant. The experience of remembering a memorized text the way it just sort of appears, like you don't think about it, you just say it, then you're sunk. Exactly, which is a really strange experience, but I think it's like that experience of writing. How can you write without thinking about what you're going to write? And yet those are the moments in writing. So to find ways to, and I think even in listening, the same thing can happen. Those moments when you're not kind of like grasping at the meaning of something, but letting it yourself be absorbed in it or be submerged in it.
Right. It's one of the things I enjoy most about hearing you read your work in particular. It's just, I can't stop as I am. If I'm reading it on the screen or on the page, can't stop and go back and say, well, does that relate to this? It's all a flow. I have to go with the flow. I wish all poets would just go around reciting their poetry all the time, but I suppose people would get arrested or something.
I'll read this. Let me find this one last section.
Okay.
I'm going to read. Allison said the magnificent frigate bird appeared near Fort Myers unusually, a consequence of global warming, someone told her. Bojan said after framing houses all day, he'd sit by himself in the bar while the others complained. he reading Euripides rather than retelling the shitty day he'd already lived once. The style of speaking through the armpit to the sky. I said sometimes the initials make a change in the flow because of the introduced structure, but other times the seams weren't so visible. There was a loon lying low in the still water of the lake I knew was a loon when it dove under and didn't return. Seven leaves and a stone are resting in the birdbath. Tonight it's going to rain. Stepping past the cottonwoods, the sun near setting hit the coot's beaks, which glowed as white as the last ice visible below the bluff a mile behind them. The full moon appeared later, the same color as the top half of a cloud. When I learn how to walk and stand and breathe, I will be a child, I told Lisa. I thought of saying again and also of writing again, but it wouldn't be correct, I thought. As I faced a large tree trunk, almost orange in the late light, I saw how the trunk twisted around its center, the hollow path around which the whole thing curved was in there somewhere, I am thinking. Then met a huge branch that twisted tight against the main trunk in the other direction, and I thought, I'm looking at an inside known by the dynamic twist of its outside. I was feeling the way it twisted in my own body twisting, as I have looking at a mirror at the back of my head that led out to the honeysuckle, cornfield, lowest muddy corner where hadn't been before, and coming back down, the gray cat by the brown-eyed Susans purred no more. Nothing provokes Lear, nothing transforms him, nothing allows him to be with Cordelia at the end. James and I talked last night about how the motives for the action of the play are discarded and forgotten as unreal. The child is for a time my child. We share a physical existence in the moon on top of the lake, two loons known diving under, Lear free of cause and effect at the table while we share a soft pretzel and three mustards. This telescope showing the white spot at the top of the moon extended a little out from the surface. We heard a loon with our ears in the world where we were flesh and blood. The brick beehive hut beside the pile of discarded bricks is hollow inside, 4 feet wide, 4 feet tall, an opening at the top the size of a face, and the sun is visible in the interior through the gaps in the courses. A beagle walks by. I hear a cardinal whistle 6 times, now 7, 8. It is hard, 9 to 10, finish 11, a sentence. Shredded plastic along the roof line of the Garver feed mill, source of the bricks, flowed out in the breeze. James wants to look at pictures. He's playing the piano for 6 minutes while I finish the writing. I see the counted whistling was coming from a very white-breasted, red-headed woodpecker climbing, striking, and whistling toward me on the hackberry branch, while the pen runs out of ink and the notes sometimes strike in time with the head. Where does he go when he isn't with me? Bits of white hackberry catch the light. The bird lands on the upside-down cedar trunk, painted black, red, and green in spots 6 years ago. Deer yard containing nuts, maples, negative space, nettles, walls, masks, the sculptures there, loitering time made thee. Something says help or promises that intrinsic motion announces salvation. The hand, foot, skin I touch. First the drunken boat is free of trade and then free of prison hulks. Between sinks into the sea by looking down into the stars reflected a bay of phosphorescence. Mystery envelops the movement of the sacred, so that the sacred object always exceeds itself, always yields something other than the terms of its encounter. If it is betrayed, what was betrayed turns out to not be the thing itself, which continues in a new form that can be touched and met. To write the I in Beloved, one must subscribe to the I am. A trio of duck surfaces, though I didn't see them duck under on my way to get linen thread to bind blank books with Jordan. The bean vine is a black eye on a red field, an eye. When counting the sounds, tum-ti-tums, sa-sa-sa, tra-la-la, give sounds the option to multiply linked sounds. The noun heard ankling my boot, sounds wed, grasshopper stitch to drakes necking there, including a mistress to hear less means hearing is held down. I saw Mr. Yu pass in front of the car and studies his walk to see how I might move safely. A mallard head in the sun was blue then green when I changed the line. I thought, I'll wait for the donkey, an apple stick, to say his name, the paper grain. Peppermint tea at mint mark while Jordan ate a scone. A sardine is a poem. A bean, a pebble, a real thing, a last time, a kinglet, the inlet of the Pike River now is moving south in a long, narrow channel of sand before it empties into the lake completely and completely continues. There was a portal on both sides of the fold Maddie made, and she knew, but the kids in the canoe didn't. Five pebbles beside the bed, 3, 2, 5, 1. Yesterday with Jordan walking on the beach, I found two large bones, scapulas or something like. The first, I thought it was a moose's horn before I realized it was a bone, was an interior that also had an interior, a webbed dark structure full of space pockets. A storm had brought it out of the pebble bank. The bone was green, and in the smooth cup of the joint, the green was webbed with dark black lines. The second bone was the first bone, I thought, like two left hands from the same man. Four small avocados, two bananas, a can of low-sodium lentil soup, two chocolate bars, Thomas's English muffins. Daisy, are you still working at the grocery store? Lisa, when will I get to see your sardine poem? James, do the other eyes have beans? The pain comes and goes, dry land, wet land, intermediate across the fold where I dreamed I had a key in my back pocket for tightening furniture in the press bed. A mundane dream is a real thing, full of the energy of confusion. I sang the song like this, come away deaf. A tongue and then a spit of land, I walked to the end and turned around. A brick that is a little off kilter slowly reveals the energy of its structure. Ground found bound in lines as poems. The words I wrote a minute ago are upside down on the left-hand page. I've turned the notebook for writing back to the beginning. At the base of a large willow by the bridge, I noticed two dozen suckers cut back to an inch, green bark flecked with gold. Who are you? I said to the birds in the reeds behind the construction site berm, and they very quickly, hermit thrushes, flew away.
Tiptoe stopped. I think you said you would tell us a bit about where the title came from.
Oh, the title, yeah. Well, the funny part of the title was I had this idea that, as I said to James, that it was from King Lear, that it was like in King Lear somewhere, but of course it isn't. He was like, that's not in King Lear anywhere. And it was, I think that...
You mean Edgar doesn't even say it when he's
saying
everything?
Even Edgar doesn't say it. It's in King Lear, but nobody says it.
Okay.
So at the same time James was doing King Lear, I was doing Twelfth Night with a group of students at Carthage, where I teach at Carthage College. And so there's a lot of Sot in that, of course. From Sir Toby. Especially. And then I think I had initialed tiptoe at some point in this. We heard it at some point. But the image of tiptoeing when Lear is following around Tom of Bedlam, sort of imitating his motions, there's this kind of tiptoeing that I think had given me the idea that it was in the poem. And then in my class, we were doing covers for our small books. They were all making small books too, which is the other reason I made one. We were using the letterpress to make covers. So I wanted a really short title with that I could use big letters and small words. And so that was the other place it came from. And so then it felt very natural. And it has only a lowercase I, everything else is capital. And then as I printed it, Lisa Bigalki was helping me do the printing, who teaches there. She explained to me that the I was, in fact, an exclamation point turned upside down that I'd use. I sort of liked that secret mistake being in there, too, that there's a...
Setting the letters,
I took an exclamation point and turned it up and down, upside down, to be an I. So the I is an upside down exclamation point. it's a new way to think of the self.
It is. Yeah. So making books is becoming more of a, or has it always been part of your
practice? No, it hasn't. Yeah, okay. That's a new thing too. And I think I've discovered, like last week I read here at Arts and Literature Lab from these small books. And then a few days later I read at Carthage College, and part of what I was reading was even newer. And I was reading just from 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. And that felt so different to me and so much less pleasant than reading from a little book I'd made. So it made me realize, like, something about actually doing that made it feel like a much more, I'm sure there were other reasons, but it felt like I felt much further away from the writing and the audience when it was just like on that,
because
the standard sheets
that
put
it into book form.
Hadn't sort of made it into this more hand-sized object.
Yeah, well, we have here a set also of four hand-sized books that were put out as a chapbook, February, March, April. These were actually put together by Jordan?
By Jordan Dunn, who started...
Who read with you at
the lab. And runs Oxeye Press, which makes many beautiful objects. And so he...
Oxeye
Press. And he ran with Andy Grisovich and Louis Friedman and Anna Vitale, a reading series here in Madison, of which now Andy and Steve Tim run. It's the other three have all ended up in different parts of the country at the moment. But those are four books of walks around this neighborhood I would mm-hmm. write while I was walking. That was kind of a predecessor to the writing after meditating. Mm-hmm. And Jordan's house was just down on La Follette. So it was like within the realm of these walks. So we were both sort of intimately familiar with the places that mm-hmm. the poems were written in. And it was really nice that he made those books there. So yeah, very happy about those. And they ended up being kind of exactly the size of the small scraps of paper that I would keep in my pocket to write on. So they're sort of recreation of that experience.
Well, they're beautiful books. And then further back, we have what I guess someone would call a more conventional publication, which came out in 2012 in the Pure Block of the Whole Imaginary, which I would describe as prose poems, but maybe mm-hmm. that's putting a label on them that they don't, I don't know if you thought of them as prose poems.
I did think of them as prose poems, yeah. I started writing prose poems, and then I decided as a little fantasy that I was going to write the other 50 prose poems that Baudelaire never wrote, because he planned to write 100 and he only wrote 50.
Oh, okay.
So that just gave me a number to think about. And
that's why there are 50 in here?
Permission, and that was sort of how I ended up. Was one thing, and certainly was those poems were very present in a certain way, although I don't claim to be. It's not a sequel.
Well,
I'm not finishing it I don't know, like the sequel to Persuasion or whatever that somebody wrote.
I think there's also Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but that's a whole different series.
It's more like that, yeah. More like Baudelaire and zombies go together ham and eggs or something. It's totally natural.
Well, I have one other question, if I might. If you could talk a little bit more about what happens when you said that The Tiptoe Sot, as we mm-hmm. have it here, is approximately, I think you said, came out of maybe five times this much, mm-hmm. four or five times this much.
Yeah.
Well, what happens when you get it all together? I mean, how do you condense something that's five times that down to
sure.
this?
Yeah.
Or is that also in...
So that process, I made a document that was the full length, mm-hmm. which I worked with both on the computer and printed. And I had... I was teaching a class where we were making books, and I had partially under Jordan's influence, who works with objects a lot, thinking about, you know, choosing a page size, choosing a book size, what mm-hmm. it was going to look like and be. And then once I made that initial collection of writing into sort of the size and shape of the pages, that helped. And then I just went through it like over and over and kept taking things out. And a lot of it was thinking about from this to this, like finding two things where something could continue way,
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, there was plenty of writing that just didn't feel like it had any need to be repeated, mm-hmm. collected, mm-hmm. I guess, in some way. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like, it's not like the best of that writing necessarily, but it's like a line through it,
a through line.
I could imagine going through it and making a different thing, mm-hmm. but I don't know what that would be. But following a thread and sort of seeing how pieces and how far apart things could be and still fit together is always exciting mm-hmm. for me, part of that process, the mm-hmm. way it could end up feeling like a kind of motion that felt to me something like that period of time.
You said was a period of about 3 months?
Yeah, I think it was three or four months.
3 or 4 months.
In the winter of...
When James was
playing Lear.
And you were doing Twelfth Night.
And doing Twelfth Night and making books, and all those things were very present. And the seasons are very present. Mm-hmm. Like when I first started working this way, I was reading a lot of both Basho and other haikai poets and those. His traveled writings, as well as the Haibun, where it's like prose and then a short mm-hmm. poem at the end, mm-hmm. were definitely
Narrow Road to the Deep North. Is that
the Narrow Road to the Deep North? And there's and then these Haibun, exactly. Those mm-hmm. books were really important. And then also I was reading Thoreau, which I somehow had never read before. So I was reading Walden. So that's another thing. And I was sort of living like on a lake, and all the same things would be happening outside my door as were happening.
You were on sabbatical, I gather.
That
were
year?
I wasn't. Wait a minute. Oh, no, this is of course not. Because
but I was
teaching
in,
it.
You know, the weird thing is there's two lakes, because then I teach on Lake Michigan. So there's always a lake out there.
Okay.
And in those days I was staying when I was in Kenosha, I would stay at the Beecher Motel, which is so that like when the shower comes on in the next room and those things, that's because I'm in hotel rooms often, and you have that peculiar experience of being both alone and with people. So that and all those places sort of become a single place mm-hmm. in some way too, mm-hmm. that is interesting.
All the lakes become one lake.
Mm-hmm.
I had written down a passage that I remember from somewhere else in Tiptoe Sot, not in any of the parts that you read today, something along the lines of all words were once things and are on their way back to being things. Does that sound familiar?
I think that.
Because I think the physicality of your language is very striking. And the fact that you're now getting more and more excited about making your own books. And,
That's definitely just the physical object. And and that also have, as you can, looking around the room, which you can't see if you're listening to this podcast, there's lots of carvings in wood from driftwood and along the lake. And that was
there are really
so that connection to like both, you know, sort of looking at things and also working a lot with things. Like there's the part of the beginning I read about writing, making things out of pebbles and ice on the beach as I'm walking, and that is another sort of trying to make the writing as physical as possible in a certain way for myself, which absolutely.
Well, thank you, Rick. Are you reading again soon?
Nothing on the immediate horizon. But this has been a great
pleasure. The school year is going to end in what, about a month?
I'm on sabbatical this year, so but the school year will end soon. That's true. Thanks. Everybody should listen to these podcasts. Wow. There's a great group of things online.
Thank you. Yeah, we have, I mean, one of the things I've learned from the podcast is just something I suspected but hadn't really experienced, which is just the range of poets that we have in Madison. It's pretty staggering. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, thanks again.